Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be looking into three important questions we're hearing from international educators this past week. Before we get into those questions, we do want to say thank you to those who are watching live here on Facebook. It's always a pleasure to connect with you and reconnect with some of you that I haven't seen in forever, and that's good to, at least in these days of global pandemic, we're still able to connect virtually and really appreciate those opportunities to have a live conversation with you on these important topics. Also, a big shout out to those who are watching on repeat, either on the Facebook page, our YouTube channel, or listening on the podcast. And as we mentioned last week, we've been added to Amazon Music as podcast. Just look for SMIE Consulting and you'll find the Midweek Roundup there. So it's really a pleasure each week to delve into three questions that many of you have asked yourselves or have asked of you in the last few weeks. We've been taking this format for the last couple of years now, a little over 2 years. We're 109 episodes in to the Midweek Roundup now. And really have found the conversations we've had to be of great value and leading to some substantive change on the number of campuses and colleagues that we've worked with. So what we do each week, to give those who are new to the Roundup an idea of what happens, each week SMIE Consulting puts out a newsletter on Mondays called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international ed news. And that contains five or six social media stories or digital media stories, as well as anywhere from 20 to 30 international ed-focused news stories, covering a range of topics from kind of the big picture issues of the day, some solutions that we're seeing gaining traction, look at what the academic year looks like on U.S. campuses, and then taking a global roundup of what other countries are dealing with. We also have sections in there from time to time on what students think, covering any recent surveys that are done. We've covered the test optional debate in depth as well. So there's a lot of great content that comes out in that newsletter each Monday at 9 a.m. Please feel free to subscribe to that free of charge. I'll drop a link to the current week's edition in the comments section on the Facebook page, but feel free to search that out on smieconsulting.org/subscribe if you'd like to be added to the mailing list for that newsletter. But let's get right now into the first question of the day. We do take three of the themes from the newsletter on Monday and answer those in question format in here on the Roundup on Wednesdays. So let's get right into the first one, and that is, are countries reopening for international students? And oftentimes in the U.S., and this is not just limited to the United States, but when you look at the rest of the world, oftentimes we get caught up in our own bubbles, and we don't really have perspective on what's going on in other countries, and particularly at a time when we're connecting virtually with places around the world, schools, counselors, students, whatever it might be. We go to virtual networking events. Maybe we pick up on some of this, but we do tend to focus on what's happening on our campus and even our, maybe a little bit broader, our state, our nation. And rarely do we have the opportunity to get perspective on how other countries are dealing with similar problems. Now, we all know in the U.S., the pandemic has been, we've been the epicenter for quite a while, and maybe that's shifting to South America now, or has for the last few weeks, but we've clearly not done a great job as a country dealing with this. I don't care what political stripe you are, when you have 200,000 deaths and over 2 million cases, that is, or 7 million cases, excuse me, that is just a challenge, for even though we're a very large country. We have not handled it well, and that's part of that is the decentralized nature of who we are as a country. Another big chunk of that is the over reliance on freedom and liberties and what those mean to us as a people, and our individualistic society tends to frown upon those things that are good for the community in many occasions. So there's a lot of kind of internal pressures that have contributed to why we haven't handled this well, leadership from the top, and decision making being delegated to the states in many cases, and even localities for schools and bars and restaurants and shops and all that. The problem is this is a disease that travels, and travels very easily. And so the many events have happened in the course of the last 6 to 8 months that have convinced us that in the U.S. we don't know how to handle these kind of things because we are okay to drop things for a couple weeks and if it helps control the spread and all that, but clearly a lot of that hasn't worked. And there's a lot of pressures that other countries have dealt with this, and they're seeing second surges now, and that's in Europe, that's starting to ramp up as well. So there's a lot of challenges here, and it's a long way off from being normal again. But when it comes to countries reopening for international students, we in the United States have actually done, surprisingly, given our circumstances as a country right now in our handling of the pandemic, we've done actually not as bad as we could have done, and were clearly thought to have done by some prognosticators that were saying, many of the national associations were saying 25% to 30% loss in international student income this year, or populations this year. You looked at one extreme, Stuart Anderson, writes regularly for Forbes and is on the board for National Foundation for American Policy, that he predicted that we would have the lowest international student intake since World War II, when those numbers first started to be captured by Open Doors. And we won't know those Open Doors numbers for another year and a half as to how this fall is as directly impacted us, or not a year and a half, but a year and 2 months when we get the 2021 report. But what we can see, the reports from the National Clearinghouse on Student Research Statistics, we quoted them a couple weeks ago. They had put us down at only 5% down in graduate international, new graduate international enrollments, and 11.2% down in international undergrad enrollments. And when you think about it, that's phenomenal. I mean, to be down only that much, considering all the baggage we have as a country right now, with the political rhetoric, with the poor handling of a pandemic, with the increasingly global competitive nature of international student admissions, for our country to only be down 11% undergrad and 5% grad for new students this fall, that's preliminary data. We don't have the full picture yet, but if that's the extent and the range of our decline this year, that's incredible that we've done that well. Because when you look at it, we have in the United States, before, as we all know, students need to get their visas at U.S. embassies and consulates overseas in order to come here. So for new international students, they have to be able to find out if consulates and embassies are open in their country, U.S. consulates and embassies. One of the stories this week in the newsletter was about in Pakistan, one of the top 20 senders to the United States, that they are just now reopening visa services October 1st. So the opportunity for Pakistani students who maybe have been admitted for the fall or couldn't get here, obviously, because they couldn't get visas, even appointments for visas, can now potentially make it in the spring, maybe for undergrad and maybe some master's programs, not doctoral programs. But when you look globally, you still have, and this was pointed out by a colleague of mine, Jason Hall, who has worked for a number of different places, including Oregon State, been very involved with Pathway Providers. But he has put together student exchange visitor wait times for, and this is all accessible through the State Department, so they have a website for wait times, and you can search by country and consulate, that right now, in terms of U.S. consulates abroad that are open, there are, I think the quote was, two-thirds of embassies and consulates are either closed, have no results, or have emergency appointments only, or show days to get a visa appointment of 999 days or longer, as they are in China right now. China is not open yet. India is barely, I think the numbers in India are showing some really serious gaps there. And if you look at this list, it's a Google Doc Google spreadsheet, I should say, that has all of the main countries that are 999 days or longer. Canada, China, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, embassies in a number of, some consulates are closed in certain cities if they're having outbreaks. Brazil, emergency appointments only. Canada, some consulates are emergency appointments only. Egypt, Estonia, India is emergency appointments only in Mumbai. There's a lot of challenges here as just trying to get an appointment. And when you think about it, nearly two-thirds of the embassies and consulates in the world being either closed, 60% basically, being over 60% being closed or showing 990 days or emergency appointments only. No wonder. To have two-thirds of the embassies in the world, including our top sending countries, to be on emergency, at best, emergency appointments only, which students can qualify for. No wonder we were only, but to only be down 5% on grad and 11% on undergrad is just amazing. And you look at some of the numbers that we talked about last week for the UK, they seem to be the ones that are coming out rosiest in this picture. The one caveat to the data we shared with you last week about that for the UK, up 9% according to UCAS, that is 9% in terms of offers made to international students, up 9% over the years past. Over last year. So we don't know yet because it's too early for them. A lot of them are just starting or have just started in the last week or two and have some serious restrictions of their own. But they seem to be the ones that have come out best. But we've seen Canada, certainly institutions there are suffering that are heavily international dependent. Financially, they're suffering. We're seeing Australia. Australia has yet to reopen for international students. They've been closed since February. They have just announced, this is like the third attempt at a pilot project to bring in international students that are coming through Singapore. That's going to be 70 of those students that are going to be arriving in October from that country, from that island state. So that is just to the Northern Territories, 70 students to one. And there, Australia in a normal October might have anywhere from 40 to 50,000 international students coming in. They've been on drip, gone from tens of thousands to dozens in the course of just a couple months. Since March, they've only had dozens of students, a maximum of 60 international students come into the country. New Zealand's been even more restricted. They've yet to reopen. They are not planning to until 2021. China, also a major receiver of international students, they are still closed to students. Foreign students who weren't already in country, those that who stayed at the beginning of the pandemic are still there. They're just now reopening for foreign scholars, posting a University World News story to that extent that talks about what's happening in China. So that there would be a quarantine for academics and researchers who are coming back beginning September 28th. And that's the students are the ones that aren't even able to come back, who did leave at the beginning of the pandemic, or certainly new students that were planning to come. So there's real challenges there in many other countries. And for us in the U.S., it's good to get perspective every once in a while. New Zealand hasn't had new international students. They had 7, I think, last month. So they're struggling. Their institutions are being bailed out. $50 million dollars by their government there to help. There are only 8 institutions there, but they're really struggling. They're also very heavily dependent on tuition dollars from international students, as are Australian universities, as are UK and Canadian institutions. So because the US, frankly, certainly our institutions are having financial struggles because of the pandemic, no doubt about that. Their friends and colleagues have been laid off from jobs because of the pandemic here in the US. But as a whole, the U.S. is positioned much better to weather this storm because we aren't as overly reliant, some institutions are, but we aren't as overly reliant on international students as many countries are in their higher education institutions. So that's to our benefit. And for us to be only down as those small percentages, when some were reporting we'd have 98% reduction in new international students coming this fall, it's a miracle as far as I'm concerned that as many international students were able to get to campus and enroll this fall as they have. Of course, one thing we did have going in our favor is after the pandemic hit, data that came out from institutions right after that in probably I think it was April or May, shared from IIE that 92% of students, international students, stayed. So there wasn't a lot lost in terms of number of students lost at the beginning. So some of them went home, they're still studying overseas, they're still maintaining their status and will still maintain their time to post-study work, as it's been so important for a number of other countries. We've seen Canada, Australia, New Zealand do that as well, extend the online time for students that are starting their studies or continuing their studies online, are not losing time towards their post-study work opportunity. So really interesting to see what comes out of that. And we've seen a lot happen with over in a short space of time, and it'll be important to keep posted on what's happening with a number of these countries as they begin to reopen. And we'll certainly bring that to you here and share their lessons learned. Next up, I want to share a topic that is, for me, a no-brainer. In terms of if you're an institution rep, the Education USA Forum, particularly if you're new to the field and you're trying to learn about new regions or countries, the wealth of expertise that Education USA has is unmatched as far as U.S. International student recruitment. They are the on-the-ground experts, the eyes and ears in countries that are the major destinations for international students. The forum is actually the 2010 when I was working at an Institute of International Education. It was a 3-day event, 2.5-day event in 2010 in a hotel in D.C. that's expanded to some larger venues over the years, and I think regularly draws over 500 U.S. representatives. Also, of course, always brings all the regional coordinators and 50 or so EdUSA advisors. Obviously, this year is very different. This is would have been the 11th annual EdUSA Forum. Normally, it happens in the summer months, but it got pushed to October. It was originally supposed to be an in-person event, one of the first in-person events post-pandemic, but we're still in the midst of it, and in-person events are going to be rare even through the springtime. So what is happening though is the EdUSA Forum is happening digitally, virtually this year, and it's going to be October 21st through the 23rd. The registration has been open for a couple weeks now for U.S. colleges. It is free this year because it's all online, and when you hear free in terms of virtual recruitment opportunities, virtual student information sessions, all of that. It's going to be mostly Zoom meetings again, and connection times and opportunities to meet with regional coordinators and individual advisors. And it's a must do. If you're not planning to do this event, it's 2.5 days, 11 to 5 on the 21st and 22nd, 10 to 5 on the 22nd and 23rd, 10 to 2. So it's almost 3 full days. Of opportunities for meetings, connections with the regional coordinators. It has educational consultants, recruitment agents, pathway program staff that are representing U.S. colleges, associations, academic and English language testing organizations are all eligible to attend this year. And that's something that are important to know, that EdUSA has now, since they are now working with agents as part of their mandate, has a very broad range of constituents that it's trying to appeal to. And certainly this event, virtual event for 3 days at the end of the month, is going to be a fantastic opportunity. Certainly insights on the current state of affairs, regional presentations by the REACs, some information from consular affairs on visas, current visa situations, English language testing opportunities. So lots of happening in terms of virtual and hybrid recruitment models. So there's a lot going on that you want to certainly see, and it's a free event. Did I mention free? So registering for the forum is as easy as can be. So definitely go to the EdUSA site. If you're not already receiving their newsletter, HEI Updates, that comes out once a month or so and has a great range of information that will help you attend. I know I'll be attending the forum. It's a very important part of my life, has been my work with Education USA. And certainly there's always a place in my heart for the REACs and the advisors that are truly the heartbeat of the network, and colleagues at State and at IIE that put this on. I always do a great job and are great hosts. So expect nothing less coming up in a couple weeks. So looking forward to connecting with many of you there as well. So how valuable is the EdUSA Forum? Invaluable this year, especially with the free opportunity to connect with all their advisors and regional coordinators. So definitely make that a part of your agenda in a couple weeks' time. So very important piece. Now, last up, we're touching on a theme that we talk about regularly here on the Roundup because it's what we do, SMIE, Social Media and International Ed Consulting. So, and the question is, what is essential in digital international student recruitment these days? And the fact that we're talking essential within digital international student recruitment, we all know that right now that is what you do if you're recruiting international students. It's all digital. You're not really doing high school visits. You're not really traveling anywhere. You're doing virtual visits. You're doing virtual college fairs. You're doing live chats. You're doing open sessions for webinars for advising centers on specific topics. You're working with partner institutions, maybe doing some sessions for them. So this piece is actually primarily for Canadian and UK institutions from a company called Higher Education Marketing. But it does paint the broad strokes of what's going to be important for you. And that is first, in terms of digitally recruiting international students, an essential element of that is building your brand reputation through social media and having a large footprint or a footprint in the areas where your international students play. And that's the live where your audiences live mantra that we always talk about here on the Roundup. But in terms of this piece here, they talk about some of the tools and knowing the tools in each target region or country where you're going, knowing what those platforms are, where you need to have a presence on there. Talking about, and they're doing it through some good examples here. They also put they say, here's a theory, here's a good way to do it in practice. I always love to see those kinds of examples. They also talk about diversifying your target markets, and that's a message we talk about all the time here at SMIE Consulting, about having more than 20% or 25% of your students from one particular country is a danger. And that's there's really a need in this market, in this day and age, to have a diverse range of students, sources for your students, international students on your campus. And how you go about finding out where those are is looking at something as simple that you have control over, hopefully your Google Analytics, your customer journey reports, your location reports will show you where the traffic is coming from outside the United States to your institutional website. And there's easy ways to track that through Google Analytics and find out what their students from particular countries or visitors from particular countries are seeing when they come to your site. And that's one thing, I think, an area that in digital recruitment, that's probably the least well utilized in terms of good analysis of your website traffic and your customer journeys on your website, telling you and giving you signs for where the drop-offs are, where there may be potential confusion of language. Maybe there's a certain markets aren't getting their questions answered on certain topics. So how do you address that? How do you have, are you sophisticated enough to have a geo-targeted geolocating website where that will track where students, visitors are from and present information that's personalized towards them? How are you doing that in an organized way? There's also, in terms of your presence online, when it's that our international students are looking at in whatever format, whether on your site, on your social, during live events, who you have representing you. When you have student personas, those are the pictures you're trying to paint for prospective students of what current international students' life is like. You might be engaged in something like Unibuddy or the Access platform. That's a real peer-to-peer kind of marketing. You may have your own well-developed student ambassador program where you match up current international students with prospective students to provide that kind of next level of localized and current knowledge from current students on what's going on your campus. So this article here, again, does kind of gives you some examples of how you can be modifying your personas to meet your current market needs, and doing that in a way that takes advantage of your current international students. Their experiences during a pandemic are the kinds of positive experiences, hopefully, and even sharing some of the tough times or tough parts of it. The more real you are, the more open you are with what life is like currently on your campus, particularly during this pandemic, the better off you're going to be in terms of reaching your prospective students for next year in a way that gives them comfort knowing that they're going to be taken care of while they're there. And certainly their parents are going to want to hear that more than ever, too, as they grapple with the safety issue. No longer is it just gun safety or weather safety or crime safety. It's all these other things, like how well is your campus handling the pandemic and what stories do you have to share from that? How regimented is your campus's protocols for testing, for quarantining, for isolation, for mask wearing? All of these things that are going to be important from a prospective student's view and a prospective student's, importantly, parents' point of view. So all of these things need to be part of the mix in terms of your messaging, in terms of your personas and what you're trying to translate to your prospective student audiences. One thing that I know many of my colleagues on the admissions side, international admissions side, have really struggled to get a hold of is a paid advertising strategy and diverting marketing dollars into promotional events, ads that promote events, that promote applications, promote scholarships, whatever the case may be. Using paid ads, paid videos on social platforms is almost a must nowadays. And it certainly is a must if you want to be successful and better than your peers in the digital space in terms of recruitment. You have to have something in there that, whether it's retargeting ad strategies to prospects who have visited your site, and then they see your ads on their social media platforms. Getting that kind of local content knowledge, that local ad expertise is going to be an important element in success long term. And then, of course, the replacing visits, in-person visits with the virtual visits and what those look like. There's a lot of different models out there, and certainly ways that you can do it well and on certainly on a budget, no budget. Many of you that are armchair recruiters, this is nothing new for you. You've been operating in this space for a number of years, but certainly for many that are have been relying on travel to get their in-person contact with students and lead generation tools, that without those there this year, you have to be beating the bushes your own digitally and virtually. And there's a lot of great tools out there to help you manage that. And this article presents a couple of examples of those. So I really encourage you to check out the links to all these articles that we're posting for more information and certainly next steps for your institution. Happy to talk with any of you if you have questions on how SMIE consulting can help in terms of a consult, in terms of a strategic planning or audits for your website, social media, whatever the need may be. Happy to help you along the way there. So until next time, we encourage you all to check out the resources. Certainly sign up for the EdUSA forum if you're not already. And look forward to chatting with you again in the weeks to come. Have a great day.